Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
The specialists are back, and we are recapping episode number 8 of Deal or No Deal Island. We're down to 6 now, right? Is it 6? That was 7-6. We're down to 6. We've now seen 2 personal offers be accepted on this game. So we can talk about how we feel about personal offers and all of that fun stuff. But we get the drama right off the bat of poor Aaron suffering without his dear Alyssa. And we see the Night Owls being portrayed as quite villainous and quite over the top. A lot of cackling, a lot of giggles. Will, what did you think about how this episode started, how it finished, where it went? What do you think?
So I think Deal or No Deal has been on a hot streak here. But this one, Phil, to me, this one fell flat in so many ways and was the worst episode of the season, maybe even worse than the non-elimination leg. I don't know if you felt the same way.
I actually kind of enjoyed it, but we'll talk. That's okay.
There were, to me, big flaws in the challenge. I think there were big flaws in the strategy of the players after the challenge. And I think there was, you know, I think the personal offer was like a fine thing to do one time early on in the game. But this is too much production interference for my liking. I mean, you are basically buying cast members out of the game to keep your favorites in. This isn't something that we even know how it works. Like, there's a banker, supposedly. Like, we know the banker isn't real. And we know if the banker was a real person even, like, it's still production. It's the show. Mm-hmm. So this just feels like they're just going to save Aaron here. And pay $100,000 to keep Aaron on the show. And it's like, I like Aaron, but I don't want him to be on the show because of that. I want him to have done something, either, you know, do something in the challenge, don't give up, or do something strategically, or work with Rob to figure something out, flip somebody over. To have the show just pick who goes and who stays. Again, I think one time was interesting early because it's like, you know, who was it? Whoever it was, Miranda was bringing nothing to the game. And it was like this kind of personal twist they could do, and it was what, $40,000 or something.
$20,000, I think, was all she got.
Only 20? I feel like there's more.
I thought it was 20, but
I mean, that would be a big jump to go from 20 to 100. Mm-hmm. Offer somebody $100,000 when a lot of these shows, I mean, no one remembers the show Spy Games. The show I worked on, the total grand prize at the end was $100,000 for the whole show. And that was, you know, a small season one Bravo show. This is a primetime NBC show, so they have the money to do it, but it just leaves a bad taste in my mouth. And I'm just not a fan, especially when you're down to final 7. I don't think you should be able to do personal offers. I don't like it. It leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
So at the end of this episode, they plopped on there a apply to be on Deal or No Deal Island. So it looks like it's getting a season two. And so I was curious and I went to the link and I clicked it and I started looking at some of the questions on the application. And one of them was, what amount of money would change your life?
Are you precise?
No, believe it or not, no. And what's funny is this episode was called Are You Meticulous, not Are You Precise, which absolutely devastated me.
Which is, that's weird on its own, but also a lot of these words haven't fit in. And we've talked about how these words, you know, they really force them in there. Mm-hmm. This one was by far the worst one.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You can keep going with your casting thing. I was just like, they need to kind of, for season two, just drop that whole act. And I'm sure they will, because they realize, let's just do the best games. We don't care about these traits. This always happens. It's silly. It's dumb and it's silly at this point.
Yeah. So I was just looking at what the application said. And the application said, what amount of money would change your life? And so I wonder if, based on the answers that they're getting from their contestants, if that is impacting the personal offer that they are presenting. Because here's the deal. You get offered anything in one of these games, I don't feel like you can say no. Because especially on a season one show like this, you don't know what the alternative is. The alternative could be second place, you go home with nothing except for your appearance fees, and that's it. That's all you get. And we don't know if it's going to be $100,000. I don't think they sign anything that guarantees that, because it's not a set prize value for the first place finisher. It's not like in Survivor where first place was $1 million. So you could work your way down and say second's going to get 100,000, third's going to get 90 or whatever it is. Like, you could do that with a show like Survivor. You can't do that with this. So when I see the $100,000, I say nobody's going to say no to that. Maybe Boston Rob says no to that because he says, I'm getting paid probably more than that to be here. Plus, I'm getting all of this additional money. Like, I've already made a whole bunch of money doing, you know, other reality TV shows. Maybe he says no. But these are never going to be said no to. So the reason I brought up the application was just because they are asking people straight up, what amount of money would change your lives? I doubt that people are saying $100,000 to get onto a game show quite like this one. But they also probably know what buttons they can push with certain players. And so it is going to be maybe uneven in the offers that are being presented. Also, this one was very much based on, I don't actually know what it was based on, because he was playing one of the best games of Deal or No Deal of all time, but he was ultimately going to walk away with nothing had this kept going. So I agree with you. I think that the personal offers are bad for the show, and it's the show revealing its hand of, we want certain players to play. Do you think Boston Rob or Aaron would ever be presented with an offer like this?
No, they wouldn't be.
100%.
Yeah. And they're only offering to the other players when those players are, if Boston Rob and Aaron had immunity tonight, both of them, if Aaron was with Boston Rob and had one of the top four cases, Dawson is not getting that offer. There's no way.
Yeah.
They want to see the more interesting thing would be for him to turn on one of the Night Owls. That would have been the best part. And they would not, definitely have not offered him something. And to me, that's bad. Like, that's not fun to watch anymore.
And so why do you think they landed at $100,000 with Dawson?
I think because now we're down to final seven. The first one was at what, final 10 or something like that? And I think it was 40. And you got to increase it as you're further along in the game. They have money to do it.
Yeah, that's it. Because what do you think? Okay, so let's put it this way. What do you think second place is walking away with from Deal or No Deal Island?
No clue.
Right, because you think it's more than $100,000? This implies that the final six should all be able to make at least 100 grand on this show. But that seems pretty crazy, considering you could get first place. I've said this before, Will. You could get first place on this show and make less prize money than the people who finish below you.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know that yet. We've done a lot of speculation on that. I believe the way that game is going to work, like the smallest case might be $100,000, Phil.
Yeah, it's true.
For Deal or No Deal. I might go 100,000, 200, 300, 400, all the way up to like 750. And then we have like, you know, we start going 1 million, 1.25, 1.5. And then we get to the final case, which will have like 8 million, 9 million in it or something. Like, I don't think they're going to let anybody walk away with like 1 cent.
I hope not, man. Otherwise, that would suck.
I doubt it.
That would suck really bad. That would be so funny. Yeah. So
sorry, I'm down. I'm just down on that. I don't know. Did you feel okay with that? You're like, oh yes, Boston Rob and Aaron are gonna survive. No, I want them in the show, but not for those reasons. Like, it feels cheap. It feels unfair.
People always complain or always speculate that Survivor is rigged or that these types of shows are rigged. And I always say Russell Hantz went home, what, third in Survivor Redemption Island? They would have found a way to keep him around longer. He went home third, finished second boot. But they would have found a way to keep him around so that him and Boston Rob really could have went head-to-head if they wanted to. But that's, I think, why Survivor has stood the test of time as well as it has, because it hasn't had these types of corny, stupid tricks. Now, you could argue with Ozzy playing on a Redemption Island season that was a way to ensure that Ozzy was going to stick around as long as humanly possible. But they also, for Winners at War, had the Edge of Extinction, but that doesn't guarantee these players a better chance of winning. It just guarantees them more screen time or on more episodes, which could ultimately result in nothing. They don't actually have an advantage here, but this is an advantage because you are telling Dawson, we will give you $100,000 to not eliminate one of the two people we want you to eliminate. And it's not like Aaron and Boston Rob had to do anything all that impressive in order for this to happen.
This was saving Aaron.
Yeah.
Here. The show paid Dawson $100,000 to basically throw the game and keep Aaron in. It's like if you're betting on sports and the person playing the game, they get offered by the mob, hey, $100,000 if you have your team lose, if you do what you can to make your team lose. Team loses, he gets $100,000. Doesn't feel right, man. It doesn't feel right. I mean, it's rigged. It really feels rigged now.
And I didn't mind the rest of the episode. Like, I was okay with the challenge, and I know you'll probably be able to describe to me why it wasn't a great challenge compared to the others, but we can talk about that. I enjoyed the Night Owl thing at the beginning. Amy just getting like such a villain edit. That's always a fun thing when you start to actually see some personality. Her and Aaron screaming at each other at the table. I also liked Nick and Dawson getting a little cocky. But I think my biggest problem is we see the people at the bottom, Rob and Aaron. It's like, oh, they avenged Alyssa. But they didn't avenge Alyssa. And the other problem is Dawson just walked out of here a winner. You tell me that I can finish seventh place on a game show where I'm going to go sit in a hut for most of the season and be well fed and compete in like mildly difficult challenges that are mostly carnival fun type games.
Oh, they're fun.
And I'm going to get $100,000 for it.
Yeah.
Sign me up, dude. Like I want to apply to the show right now.
He's absolutely the winner of the show. Phil, if you apply to the show and get on, what you do is be a really, really boring character who's not playing the game that hard. Make sure there's some, you know, the favorites. You'll be able to tell who they are. Make sure they're still in the game. And then go play Deal or No Deal, and you'll get offered a personal offer. That's how you play Deal or No Deal. See, that's to me, like, season two is screwed now. Because people are going to be like, just give me the personal offer. Give me $100,000. I'm out of here.
I wonder, so I have two things to say on that. I wonder if one, if they'll start getting rid of these personal offers or if they'll be more involved in the challenges and not so much in this. And then second, Will, when you're an alpha, you can't turn it off. And I just can't turn it off, you know? I just can't turn it off. I'm just too big of a personality.
I feel like Nick and Dawson both think they're alphas, and then they probably watch
Yeah, but there's a difference between thinking and being. There's a difference. I don't have the muscles of either of them, but I got a personality that could run circles. That's all I'm saying. I don't know, man. You hang out with me, and you're a big time hotshot out here. So, you know, maybe this is a big deal. Maybe this says something about me. But yeah, I mean, you're right. I'm obviously trolling, but you are right. The goal at this point should be, if you want to get paid, if you're looking at season one and you're going on to season two, and you go out there and you see Ceree Fields or Sandra Diaz Twine out there, don't align with them. Don't fight with them. Do nothing. And then go up there when one of them is not safe, and you will probably get a personal offer because they're
And then tell the person interviewing you that you're gonna target the reality star who's on this season.
And they'll be like, here's $100,000, get out.
And then
you ever say no to these? You never say no to these offers, ever.
I mean, if it was like $25,000 here, I think you'd probably say no. I mean, we've talked about that a little bit. $25,000. They've got to
get you much.
They got to take out a lot of taxes on that. You're probably seeing half of it, maybe 60%, somewhere between 50 and 60% of it, which, hey, 12 and a half grand is not anything to like laugh at. But when you are in final seven of a game and the ultimate prize could be $4, $5, $6 million, we don't know. Let's crunch those numbers. Let's say we're looking at 4 million as a potential win, a likely win. If this final case balloons up to over 10 and we're starting on the left side with 100,000, 4 million is not that crazy. And then the odds, you have 1 in 7 left, so you got a 1 in 7 chance. So your value prop there is $571,000.
So really, he made a bad deal.
Well, still, you only have, you're not, we, in that total here, we can play with that total too and see if it's 2 million for the final, 285 is the value prop. Mm-hmm. It's 1 million, 142,000, which we think they're going to get over a million, but let's say they don't. Let's say it's 750. Even at $750,000, it's still his share would be, you know, 107,000. But at that point, you do know there's a 107 or 100, you know, it's still 1 in 7. So, I mean, take the 100K. But yeah, his spot was worth over $100,000 in the show. Like, if it's just anyone gambling, if we do think that the prize money's over a million, which we do.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, but I still don't think, I mean, you have to think about it as, yeah, what's your spot valued at, but you are walking with $100,000 in your hand. And like you said, it's prize money. So it's going to get taxed like hell. It's going to be down to 50K, maybe even a little bit less, who knows, but you're still being told here is $100,000. You have to do nothing else to prove anything. You don't, there's no risk to this. It's just $100,000 because they try to hit you with, oh, but you've been fighting to stay in the game. You want to be here. It could be.
Oh, more. Once they said it was $100,000, once the banker called, I literally laughed out loud and said, okay, here's a personal offer. They're going to buy him out of the game to keep Aaron safe.
Yeah.
Bum, 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 bum. Personal offer. Then he goes $100,000. I go, yeah, that's about right. I mean, he's going to take that and Aaron stays. And that's it. The drama's done. The game means nothing because the show can come in and just buy everyone out when they want to.
Yeah. And nobody in their right mind. I mean, even if it seems like, oh, well, he could have made more. 100,000 is 100,000, man. I mean, I'm not saying no to $100,000 ever. You got to be kidding me. And the alternative isn't all that enticing. It tries to be, oh, well, you've been fighting to stay in this game. You're doing that. It's like, so what? Who cares? Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't. So, but let's try to spin this. Let's try to spin this a little bit differently, even though you're going to be negative on the challenge too. Down episode for Mr. Will here. But
let's first talk about the, I want to talk a little bit after the challenge, even though that might sound counterintuitive, just to,
okay,
as we're talking about, you know, the temple and the personal offer and the end of the episode. I think the strategy from Dawson here was absolutely terrible. To put himself into the temple to play Deal or No Deal Island. To me, this was really dumb. And the fact that he gets rewarded for it makes the whole personal offer feel even worse to me. Mm-hmm. Did you have any problem with the way he played the game? Because to me, it was him, Aaron, and Amy in the bottom three.
He's never getting picked to be the person eliminated.
If Aaron plays,
Amy's gone.
Amy's gone if Aaron wins. Aaron's gone if Aaron loses. And that's it. So if you're Dawson, just don't play. Don't play. Have Aaron play or have Amy play, and it's the same story. Those two are at each other's throats. You do not need to put yourself in position to even get eliminated. And then Aaron comes in saying, I want to play, and you know he's going to take out Amy before he takes out you because they had this big blow up. So for Dawson to put himself, I had such a problem with that to begin with. And then the fact that that was rewarded with $100,000, it makes the whole strategy of this game kind of goes out the window, because I thought this was a prime place And Dawson says to the camera in interview, like, I want to make a big move. Why? There's no jury. Like, all you need to do is stay in the game. Don't make a big move. Make a smart move. And I think it was one of these times where he could have actually shown some strategic chops and been like, hey, this is my move now. I'm going to let Aaron do it and change my mind so that I guarantee safety. And he could have explained that at least if he wants to come across as strategic, because here he doesn't at all. And so the fact that that wasn't even brought up, mentioned, or discussed, and then he goes in and then gets this $100,000, the whole thing feels
by the banker for taking risks. The banker loves risk takers, and he kept saying he was in control of his own game.
Yeah, but wouldn't it be more precise to guarantee yourself to thread the needle here between Amy and Aaron, and that you would?
There's no way he should have went home. You're right.
He could have persuaded Aaron to get rid of Amy if he gives up his spot and lets Aaron play. He could have, I don't know, whatever the other episode titles have been. I mean, that really was bad too. The whole strategy, because there was strategy to be had. That's when it's like when we're watching Survivor, like the whole thing with the end of 46 with Keturah, how there was these strategic plays that could have been made to upset the majority, but they just never were able to get it together. And when you can see the tangible plan, that really excites you as a viewer in an audience. Like, oh, this is what they could do. Mm-hmm. Here, this is what Dawson could have done, and he doesn't do it, and then gets rewarded for it, makes it even worse. So I just had to get that out there too.
No, and I totally agree with you. I thought that was weird too, because really the situation is, I understand the logic of Amy wanting to play, because she does have, Amy wants either her or Dawson to play.
Mm-hmm.
She prefers Dawson to play, because if Dawson plays, she has a 0% chance of going home. If she plays, though,
yeah, again, maybe that was Amy's move and she made that move, but at least then show us her strategy. But Amy or Dawson, either of them were in a really good spot. I think Dawson is in a better spot though, because all he needs to do is not play. Okay, where Amy.
Well, I agree with you. Amy. So that's what I was about to
say. Amy just needs Dawson to play. If Aaron plays, Amy's still kind of.
Yeah. If you look at the numbers, Aaron, I don't know exactly what this percentage wise comes out to, but if Dawson has a 0% chance of going home if he doesn't play, Amy has a 50% chance of going home if she plays, because if she plays and loses, she goes home. If she plays and wins, she's good. And then Aaron, what is his percentages here? It's still 50% if he plays, but if he doesn't play, is it worse than 50% or no? Like what is that?
If we're treating Deal or No Deal as a coin flip win or lose game, which often it will come down to that. If you get down to, you know, basically one case or two cases left, and your case is either higher or lower, or higher or lower than the offer, then yeah, it's a coin flip. So by Dawson playing, it's 50-50 for Aaron and it's 50-50 for Dawson. And Amy is 100% safe.
Yeah. Yeah. So the thing in this situation was Aaron or Amy were always going to have a 50% chance of going home. Whether they played or didn't play, they were going to have a 50% chance. But Dawson was almost looking at this with a fallacy here of, well, no, two Amy, of my people are here.
No, Amy.
I'm saying if Aaron or Amy play, it's a 50% chance of either one of them going home.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So this is what I'm saying. But I think Dawson was looking at this with a wrong thought process of, well, two of the three of us are in the Night Owl Alliance, so I need to play to save the Night Owl Alliance. Well, no, you don't, because if Amy plays, either her or Aaron are going home. If Aaron plays, either her or Aaron are going home. He was acting as if he had some control. He'd been underestimated in this game, and this was going to be some huge move where he was going to make this move. He was going to save the Night Owl Alliance because he was going to beat the game. But it's a coin flip game, and we've talked about that. So it doesn't matter. Like I was saying, he's playing the best game of Deal or No Deal I've ever seen, where he gets offered $1.1 million to start. And that would have been a bad deal according to this. Whereas Boston Rob took a deal for what, like $80,000, $7,000. It was something ridiculously low. And that was a good deal strictly because of what was in his case. If Dawson was playing Deal or No Deal, the old show with Howie Mandel, he would have cleaned up. He would have walked out of there with a bunch of money. He'd been like, great, that was awesome. But because of this game, it's always a coin flip. And Dawson was acting as if he was going to skew the odds in the favor of his group, which was never even a possibility.
Yeah, it felt really weird for him to come out of nowhere and say, I've been underestimated. I got to make a move. And your move is playing a coin flip game. And then that's going to somehow make you more strategic to the audience, to who, to your fellow players. Do you even want to be more strategic or more of a gamer or more of a threat to your fellow players? Again, there's no jury here. At least that's what we've been told. Maybe they know otherwise, that, hey, they've seen some of the eliminated contestants sticking around at some production camp. I doubt that would, I mean, that wouldn't be good if they let people see that. And there is some sort of vote between the final two to go play. And we just don't know that. And maybe they have some information there. That's possible. But from what we know, there is no jury. And I just seem such so weird. And honestly, it's starting to make me think, Phil, that someone was like, hey, Dawson, you should play tonight. Like someone, like a producer.
Really?
Like that's what it's starting to feel like. Because it makes no sense strategically for him to do what he did. He had a guaranteed spot in the final six, a 1-in-6 shot to win at least $1 million. Okay. He's not, from what we tell, we can tell from him, he's not some bumbling idiot. Mm-hmm. The strategy we're talking about here is not complicated. No. If Aaron plays, you are safe. If Amy plays, you are safe. If you play, you could go home. Which of those three situations do you want? Oh, I want the situation where I have a 50% chance of going home. That's what he chooses. And there's not really a valid explanation for this other than I want to make a big move, which doesn't make any sense within the game format that we're playing. You don't need to make a big move because there's no jury. And you definitely don't want to make a big move to stand out in the final six as someone who's going to be a threat, you know, strategically or socially, or even, you know, he is already is a physical threat. So like, why would he want to increase his threat level going into a final six? So,
well, and let me ask you this
across the board. And then Nick had said something about, okay, well, Amy's already played. She beat the banker. Aaron's played. He's beat the banker. Now it's time for Dawson to go. And that logic also felt extremely made up. Like it all felt really, it felt like a play, like this whole episode.
But that one I could see being made up to like make it seem like, oh, like I'm not a bad guy. I'm not doing this because of the night.
Yeah, that's true. I could see he's using that as a way to be like, I'm going to put Dawson up because he's my buddy and I want him to eliminate Aaron.
Yeah.
But I mean, even from Nick's perspective, this is a really bad move. He should know, because it's pretty clear to us at least, that Dawson is his number one ally and that Amy is not. So I think you put up Amy or you put up Aaron, and then you have Amy or Aaron go home and you keep Dawson. So even if you have to lose a night owl to this deal or no deal game, it's Amy and not your number one ally, Dawson. So it just doesn't add up anywhere.
So let me ask you this, though. So I actually think that this would be a fun game to play. When the little apply thing came up, I was like, ooh, I'll go over there. Maybe I'll send a little application because it's you're not starving. Boston Rob was talking about on Tyson's podcast that he's fed very well. So that's a good – that's plus. Like, there's – and I feel like this would be fun. But my question to you is, if you're going to play Deal or No Deal Island, if you are a fan of the show who said, I want to participate in this, is your best strategy – to do nothing? And is that a flaw with this game?
I think that's a flaw with a lot of these shows. I mean, we see it in Survivor all the time.
And the Traitors.
I mean, it's really tough. I think it's probably worse in the Traitors than it is in any other show, where anyone who tosses out a name is like, oh, well, you must be a traitor then. And it's like, whoa, wait, what? Like, I'm playing the game here. I want to figure out who the traitor is. And anyone who is loud, anyone who's good TV, often gets, you know, banished or murdered. And especially banished. Usually they're banished out by their fellow faithful. And here, I mean, if you stick out and you cause problems, make waves, ruffle feathers, whatever you want to say, you're going to be chosen to play Deal or No Deal, or the winner Deal or No Deal can look at you and eliminate you. And so I do think it is a problem where it's like good. The good TV is usually the worst gameplay for a lot of these people.
We saw that with Branson all the way back in the first episode where he goes back to help Kim just because he didn't want it to take hours. And then that was all the reason needed for him to be pointed at and eliminated from this game. And I don't think that's even.
Yeah. And Branson probably would have been one of the more interesting strategic players on this season. And the fact that he wanted to like go play a game and like do something, it totally bit him in the ass. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the challenge, though.
Oh, we got to get Goombas up here.
Oh, yeah, so, he's behind, so go ahead.
Goomba's saying the math isn't 1 in 7. He still would have had to win a likely 50-50 to make a good deal and then a 1 in 6 shot to make the final game. I guess, so he's saying he has to make a good deal after. I was actually confused on this part, so thank you for bringing this up, Goombas. Could he have, was it an option for Dawson to say, I don't want the personal offer, but I also want to say, like, deal to the deal or no to the deal? Like, it wasn't clear what would have happened. Like, was the personal offer baked into one side of deal or no deal, I guess?
I feel like the personal offer was in there because he was going to say no deal. And they wanted him to make a deal, but I think they knew, you were talking about production interference, I think they knew he was making a bad deal by making the deal. So this personal offer was in there because it made no sense. He still had a two-thirds chance that his case was better than the case that was out, than the offer. And so he has a 66.7% chance better.
So by saying the smart, I forget what the numbers were at this point, but let's say it was two-thirds.
It was 275, 175, and then like 300 or something like that.
Right. So I think he was going to say no deal because it's likely higher. Mm-hmm. We open up another two cases, and let's say it is 50-50 to make a good deal at this point.
He's going to make the good deal because he had the best case. He was going to take the case, his case.
Well, he thought he knew what was in his case, and he was right, which was interesting. Mm-hmm. But let's say, just for the math of things, that you've got, okay. So basically, you got a 1 in 2 shot to get to final six. And at that point, then it's 1 in 6. So really, we're looking with 1 in 12 odds of getting here. And so let's see if it's 2 million. Yeah, I mean, even if it's 2 million, his spot is worth $166,000. And not saying I would have done anything differently than Doss. I'm just looking at more from a what is his current position in the game worth? And say it's a 1 in 12 shot at, you know, $2 million. That spot is worth $166,000. It doesn't mean you should not take the deal. But, you know, if this was lower stakes, and are you making a wise decision? Or it's like in poker, you know, it's like if you are betting $10 to win $1,000, even if your odds are, you know, you have a 1 in 10 shot to win the pot, but you're getting 100 to 1 on your money, it's still a good bet to make. You're still making the right call, but even in putting in $10, even if it's, you know, 1 in 10, only 10% chance you're going to win, you're getting paid out as if, you know, 1 in 100, 1% chance to win. So yeah, you want to look at those. So again, not saying that Dawson shouldn't have taken this money. I think you absolutely take it, especially because these players don't have like a stake of like hundreds of thousands of dollars that they're gambling on here. This is a one-time thing. But it was interesting looking at it from a math perspective. And Goomis, thank you for pointing that out about the, it's not 1 in 7. It's actually 1 in 2. Times 1 in 6 to make it 1 in 12. But yeah.
Typical Will getting his math wrong. All right. That's
true. Yeah.
Let's talk about the challenge. Because I actually, what I appreciate about this challenge was you had to follow everything along and you could just mess up. We saw Amy do this where she was trucking along, thought she had the right one, then totally got confused and lost as to where she was, and then had to go and just pull a case. So there is some risk versus reward there. But what did you not like about this? I love being negative, Will. God forbid we say anything positive.
No, I really, really like the challenges this season. This one, I think there were some flaws for sure. Where do I start?
Oh, God. Oh my God.
I think maybe, and I don't want to be too hard on the whole, are you precise or are you meticulous? But this game did not test precision whatsoever. In the very slight way that you could potentially argue precision, as if you have like 10 ropes and they're all tangled around and you have to follow the one rope. And you're following it under, over, through all the other ropes. And you have to be so meticulous and precise that you are staying with the rope that you want. I could maybe see an argument there, even though that would be extremely thin. But I don't want to knock the challenge for that. Because, again, these words are coming from some executives at NBC. That are like, we want each challenge to be based on a word. And that rarely leads to good TV. Mm-hmm. It really pigeonholes you into what you can do, and then you have to make leaps and jumps, as we're seeing here. Especially, well, let me get there.
Yeah. Go ahead. You're getting a little excited, a little too excited here, buddy.
So for me, the precision thing only worked in that if you were following ropes tangled. During the challenge, it looked like every rope was like had its own lane or maybe crossed another rope. Like one or two times, like there were a couple overlaps, and I know they went underwater and they were probably woven through, and that's all fine and good. I could not believe when they got to the end of their ropes that they had been meticulously and precisely following, that they get there, that the rope, the cases are attached, and they don't unclip the case. They should have had to unclip the case. It does so many things for you. One is that if you unclip the case, you are then not following the same path you took. And we didn't see this on the show, but if I'm following, let's say, the $4 million case or whatever, the 4.5 million, whatever the highest case was, and I'm on this path for about 60% of it, let's say 70% in, and I cross with another rope and I make a mistake, okay, I'm on this other rope that I haven't been on, then I follow that rope up into the tree and it's on there. If I unclip it and I have to just get it back, I get no information from the course on whether my case is correct or not. But now I can take this incorrect case, go 60 to 70% to where I made my mistake. And now my rope at some point is going to veer off differently. I'm like, wait a second. This is not the path I took. This is not the rope I was following. And now you can get that information and say, okay, this is not the one I wanted. I'm going to go back and put it there. Now we didn't see that, but that the game should have let you, if you unclip it, it is a much better game and actually testing precision of whether you got it right. Because now once you have this case and it's clipped onto the rope, and then we got these confessionals from Nick, I had to be really precise. There is no precision at all going on because the case is on one rope. There's no precision. You're just pushing the case through. You can't get lost now. You can't get tangled on the way back. You can't get confused. And then to make this all even worse, this is the worst part of it being clipped. Now, when you get back to the start, you are immediately revealing what the value of your case is because it's attached to the podium with that number. So Nick gets back and he's immediately able to see if he was correct or not. And that removed all suspense from the challenge where if you unclip it, everyone comes back and you see all these ropes going. You're like, man, I don't know. I hope I followed the right rope. I hope I didn't get mixed up. And they all have their cases, their stands. And we do get I do like the suspenseful moments when they open the case. It actually means more here than it does when we play Deal or No Deal in the temple at the end. A lot of the times that these cases are deciding who gets immunity, who's going to be in the bottom and have a very big influence. We're like, yeah, okay. You open a $500 case in the temple. Boo hoo. We're going to get down to three or two cases anyway. And it's going to be a coin flip. So like, these case reveals are great, and we completely didn't have any suspense or case reveals. So for me, leaving that case clipped in didn't make any sense. I don't know.
Okay,
why.
Okay, so I have my theory on this, and I think it is they wanted the cases clipped in because then it was difficult to bring them back. I think that's what they were thinking. Is it
right?
To bring, hang is, on. I want to explain kind of like where, okay, I think they were thinking, and then jump in because I agree with most of what you said. I think that they were thinking that's what was going to be the excitement of this. But while it was difficult, while we saw it hang up Aaron, The problem was, we talk about the mythical clock in all of these shows. You have 45 minutes. You have an hour. We see Allen in the trader saying you have 10 seconds and they're 12 miles away and they somehow do it in 10 seconds. I think with Deal or No Deal Island, the mythical clock was legit in this episode, and it wasn't long enough for the players to actually have the opportunity, as we've seen in other challenges, to go back and pick a second case if they realize, if they think that theirs is wrong. So I think what they were thinking when they made this challenge was they're going to follow it out. It's going to be difficult to bring back. They're going to bring it back. They're going to be wrong. And then if they get it wrong and it's lower than they thought, then they're going to say, shit, should I go back out and try to follow a different rope? Try to follow the rope that I intentionally was going for originally. The problem was there was not enough time for anybody after they got back because the course itself was actually too difficult. So you eliminated what was supposed to be the fun aspect, the fun decision of, I think I grabbed the wrong one. What do I do? I'm going to go back out and try to get another one because it was too hard. And therefore, everybody was just, okay, well, I went out, I got the wrong one. You see Amy knowing that she's going to be fifth, but what can she do? There's nothing she can do. There's not enough time. So I think they butchered that.
Yeah, and I think that's a decision that had to be made. Well, do we want them going back out if they realize it's wrong, which could be fun, and that way they have to know their values. Mm-hmm. But again, this whole game is supposed to be about precision. It should be a one-time thing. Follow the rope, get it, and then you bring it back. You have your case, and it's a do-or-die moment. You open your case, and you get that suspense, especially because there wasn't enough time to go back anyway. And they've had so many challenges where you can make that decision. Are you going to take a risk? Are you going to gamble? That wasn't the theme of this one. This one was be precise. So I don't mind if it's like a one-time thing and that time is slow, but then don't show me their cases when they get back. Have everyone come back with a case and it's now testing. How precise were you? It's like then you have someone saying next, like, I think I got the 4.5. Someone else could be like, yeah, he probably like wrong, be like, I don't know. I veered off from Nick at some point. He got ahead of me, but hey, our ropes, they were together for a while. They split. I could have the 4.5, you know? Mm-hmm. Something where we have suspense on what you got. This was just like womp womp, but just you came back and like you said, because it wasn't time to go get another case, like, okay, I was wrong, and that's it. And we're just gonna have iced tea and it's gonna be weird.
Yeah, because I believe what was the fun aspect of this was who's going to chase after the big one. You know that if you're top four, you're safe. And I think the fun strategy here was, am I going after the top case or should I go after second or third so that not everybody's going after the same one? We see Rob say that and he's like, well, somebody got lucky. And he did get lucky. Good for him because he was following Nick originally, realized he wasn't going to be able to compete with Nick. What's he doing? He just got to be top four. That's fine. So
yeah, isn't that annoying that Boston Rob just got
lucky? I think what's annoying about it is I think that they should have done top two were safe. So most people would have gone for the top two cases. But then if you make the mistake, now you could drop the third, fourth, fifth, whatever it is. The other thing was, what did you think about the sand at the beginning of this?
I like the sand. I think it's sometimes tough with this stuff because when you force players to sabotage each other, it doesn't feel like sabotage. That's often just a tricky thing. And then people will go one at a time and they'll be like, oh, you got me, so I'm going to get you. And then people look and like, oh, well, this player hasn't had any sand yet. And they just want to like even it out. I mean, there's a chance Dawson put it in Stephanie's thing and then the sand had no meaning. We were one thing away from that. And so that's tough with that, where a lot of players don't want to outwardly sabotage each other and make enemies. And that's smart by them. And so when the game forces you to do that, they often find a way to like make everyone even and like make everyone feel like it's fair. So
yeah,
I didn't mind it though. I think Stephanie was insane for thinking she had so much time. Like she was there just like looking at all the cases and really thinking about it. And then by the time she's falling a rope and leaving, the other group that she had like a 30-second head start on was already down there.
And again, this comes to the fact, though, of I feel like she probably was comfortable taking more time because she knew she just had to be top four. So really, like, as long as you have a little bit of a lead on them, you should be able to get one of the top four cases. Go after the fourth highest. The people with the, like, a lot of people are going to go after the top because they want to have the control over who's getting sent in.
And then wasn't it Stephanie who grabbed the fifth highest value? Like, she didn't even calculate it right?
Was it? No, Amy got hers wrong. It was Amy.
I thought it was Stephanie for some reason that got the...
No, Stephanie was right. She went for 4 million and got 4 million.
Okay. So Amy was like, I want to go for the fourth highest case, but she accidentally got the fifth highest case because her math, she just didn't count correctly.
No, she lost. She lost the she lost a rope.
No, okay. Well, somebody said I got the case I wanted, but I didn't realize the case I wanted.
That was Stephanie. You're
that
right.
Was you're Stephanie. Right. That was Stephanie. She was you're there right. for 30 seconds looking
Jordan?
At it.
Or was that Jordan?
That
might have been Jordan.
I think it was Stephanie. Who had all the extra time to look at the cases because she really thought about which case to, she's like, almost the extra time was a curse. She's like, I have this extra time. I'm going to use it to really think, okay, I just need to be top four. I don't need to be number one. All right, I'm going to go for the fourth highest case. And then was looking at the values, found the fourth highest value case, went out and got it, and then came back and was like, shit, that wasn't the fourth highest value case. That was the fifth highest value case. I think that's what happened with Steph.
Could be Steph. I can't remember. Let's throw this question up here or this statement up. And I think we can end on this one. Patrick Stahl, I like the balance of these personal offers are giving. It makes it worth it to cheer when low values go off the board. Otherwise you want to root for high values to go off the board. Is there anything in that, Will, do you think of they're putting out the personal offers to reward people for actually playing a good game of Deal or No Deal?
No, I don't think there's any, I didn't see any correlation between the personal offer having anything to do with what briefcases had been pulled or not. I didn't see any correlation there. There might be. And Patrick, if you see a reason to think that because he was pulling the lower valued cases that he got a good personal offer, but I mean, what his offer was like, what, over, it was over a million two times, even though like five boxes are over 2 million. So it's like, what? I mean, that first offer, Phil, was so laughable.
Oh, it I know. Like, there was four numbers.
It was like $300. It was like $300 on the left, and then it was like one.
I think the lowest value was like 2.2 million.
Yeah, 2.25 million or something. And there's like $11 million on the board, and they offer him like $1 million, and it's like, yeah, obviously no deal.
Crazy.
And then I don't see how that the personal offer that like the value of that $100,000 is correlated whatsoever to the offer that he's getting in the actual game.
Yeah, I agree with that. I wonder if we will see in the future if like if you play a good game of Deal or No Deal Island, I'm talking like season two, if you play a good game of Deal or No Deal Island, you get a better personal offer. Maybe that's established early on so that there is a reward for actually playing the game better, considering adding to the case.
No, if they're playing a good game of Deal or No Deal Island, you're not getting a personal offer because they don't want you to get eliminated.
No, I mean Deal or No Deal, not Deal or No Deal Island, Deal or No Deal.
Oh.
I just meant Deal or No Deal. Okay. If you're playing good at the end of the game, that's what I'm more saying.
The temple is what you're saying.
Yes, yes, the temple.
No, that's, I mean, I don't see any correlation there. I think this was, hey, we got to save Aaron. If he's looking like he's going to win, offer him 100K. Buy him out. Yeah,
buy him out.
that's what it was.
And that's literally what happened. That's literally what happened. You have anything else you want to say about this episode?
No. I mean, I said what I said. I don't hate the show. This felt rigged. The challenge didn't really make sense. Could have been better. Strategy was completely removed from after the challenge, which should be the most strategic point in the game. No one thought through the actual decision making and how this show works. So those were just three, just kind of falling flat in three ways here.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm enjoying it. I'm excited for next week. I do agree with you though that there are some flaws, and we'll have to talk about those as we continue on this journey. Either four episodes left or two episodes left. I think it is four, but there's four episodes left, so we have like a month left of this. That'll be. I don't know if I can do finale. Okay. Anyway, we'll talk about it. All right, everybody. Thank you all so much for listening. Become a patron, patreon.com/thespecialist. Hope you enjoyed this episode of Deal or No. Deal Island, at least our recap, even if you didn't enjoy the actual show. Make sure to like the video, subscribe to the channel, and we will see you next time.
See ya.